The first gentleman is author of God Save the Fan. He is the founder and also, and as we'll hold this up to the camera here, the founder and originally in charge at Deadspin.com, where you can still find his writing. You can also find him at the Sporting News, New York Magazine, other platforms as well. There's always a lot to talk about with this gentleman. He was on with us a long time ago. Was kind enough to come on a couple of years ago when we did a marathon program here that was a charity fundraiser, and he was a keynote guest on that broadcast. It's a pleasure to welcome back to Sports Talk Network, Will Leach. So, Will, truly a pleasure to have you on tonight. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. It's an honor that you would have me, that you would lower your standards as much to have me on.
Well, you know what? Again, you've written about a lot of different things in a lot of different places. A lot of things that I want to ask you about, including, I'll tell you what, why don't I start with this one before we get to maybe some of the more predictable topics to talk about with you. We had on a gentleman, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, ST Van Arsdale from Movie Line. We were talking about different movies. One of the things that he had written about recently for The Reeler was We Live in Public, which, of course, I became initially aware of through your blog months ago and reading your review of it. Let's start on that. That's living the experience had to be surreal, being in the webcam house at the height of the dot-com era, and then B, to now see the movie come out and you're so far removed from it. That's got to be weird on, like, 65 different levels.
Yeah, it's very strange because the house that was filled up with all the cameras, it was the idea was that it would be a 100-day project, but the couple that had set up the project, they broke up with like 20 days to go, so I stayed there for the last 10 days. So I felt bad. This incredible project, an amazing artistic, very expensive project to capture real life, for the last week had me doing my laundry and watching baseball. So I think if you wonder why that show got canceled, but yeah, the idea that to be in a house that was rigged completely with cameras, the first thing, probably the most important lesson they told me when I got in there was to know how to fog up the shower cameras.
Well,
so I think I did an okay job at that, but I haven't seen the movie yet, so there's a little bit of a fear that somehow there's footage of a naked circa 2000 Will Leach that multiplexes will be paying their good hard-earned money for.
Yes, something for them to exploit, definitely. You know, and talking about that, when we had ST on the show, we were kind of saying it's only, what, 9-10 years ago, but it's really almost a period piece, isn't it? I mean, when you look at the dot-com era, you know, and the way that things move so fast these days, you could almost call that a period piece.
Oh, it's like remains of the day. I mean, it really is. It's like a Civil War reenactment. It really is such a different time. And you know, I think because I moved out to New York under that kind of idea. Like, you know, that I had written for a website and it was bought by some hot web media company that was going to make everybody rich and so on. And that lasted about 3 months. And so yeah, that kind of heady time of late 1900s, 1990s, and the early aughts, I guess is the case maybe. Uh-huh. There were definitely a lot of very young people with no marketable skills that somehow had a lot of money and a lot of dumb things to waste it on. So it is very strange to think of that. It's a very strange time, I think, in New York City history. The notion, right when there were really no ramifications for anything that you did, and no reason to worry about anything. It was like the crazy Bright Lights, Big City '80s, except a lot more nerdy.
It's going to be fun in another 40 years or so to crack open those time capsules from that period of time there and see everything that's happened. But, you know, clearly, again, much has happened with you over time here. You know, from there, you went on to Deadspin. And something I want to ask you about, because, again, it's very timely, and you yourself have written about it, this Artie Lang, Joe Buck situation from the other night. And I'm seeing some people draw surface comparisons in terms of water cooler talk to your whole thing last year with Buzz on the Bob Costas show. I look at that, I don't quite see that as much because, again, Buzz's side of it wasn't really that substantive, and I think he'd probably like to have it back as far as how he phrased it. But you guys were arguing about something that was actually happening. This, to me, just more reeks of somebody, you know, looking at that, you know, in Artie Lang and figuring out, hey, here's a way to get my 15 minutes of YouTube fame. I don't really see the parallel with your situation on there last year on the Costas show, do you?
Well, certainly it was something that HBO could pretend they were sad that happened, but were really happy that everyone's talking about it. I guess that's the only parallel that I can find. But yeah, it's definitely a strange thing. I was trying to think of what the parallel of who I was in that situation. That I don't know. I guess I would be Joe Buck, I guess, and I guess Paul Rudd would be Braylon Edwards. I don't know how the parallel works, but you know, I think I actually being a good St. Louis boy, I actually like Joe Buck, but I'm not so sure that that show was outside of the Artie Lang thing was inherently interesting. I think the Costa show had some more interesting panels other than the one that kind of blow up than necessarily that did. But hey, you know, I mean, listen, HBO gets to do the thing. They've got to do this thing all week. We're really sorry that happened. We can't believe that happened. But hey, keep talking about our show. Keep talking about our show. So I think, you know, if you invite Artie Lang on a show, you have to have some idea of what you're going to get.
Oh, I agree completely. And our producer in New York, who is the same gentleman who got you booked here this evening, he was in the studio audience, called me after the show that night because he knows I don't have HBO, and he said, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." And he broke it down for me. You know, it was quite a moment to actually to be there. You know, and you know, as you know, last year to live in that moment is absolutely sensational as well. But another thing that's a parallel is this same gentleman, our producer, Mr. Servillo, who has covered some Phillies games recently, and you know, and it sees how big of a story it is with Raul Ibanez. He in particular wanted me to ask for your take on that situation here, as far as bloggers making some of the guesses that they've made about the source of Raul's power this year, and something where, again, maybe I don't have enough imagination. I just chalk it up to a guy just being out of his mind for a couple, you know, months in time here, and he's probably going to fall back to earth in the second half. But there was a gentleman who, again, drew some examples from that, you know, statistically in terms of this type of stuff here. And again, there are those that are pointing to it, I guess Ken Rosenthal among others, as maybe an example of the worst excesses that Buzz Bissinger was talking about last year. But where do you come down on how this has shaken out with some of the apparently unfounded speculation with Raul Ibanez?
Well, you know, the original post was a lot more measured than I think people realize. I think it was sort of a little sloppily written, which I think is maybe what led to this a little bit. But the post was not this. Well, obviously Raul Ibanez is doing steroids because he's all of a sudden hitting all these homers. He actually tried to take like a statistical look under the premise, which is frankly not something that's limited to bloggers. The notion that many mainstream writers have had of the idea that, like, with everything that happened in the late 90s and early 2000s with steroids, you know, can you trust anyone anymore? And that kind of idea of that sort of lost innocence. I think what he was trying to do with the post, and I'm not sure he was entirely successful with it, but I think what he was trying to do was to say, okay, let's just say, theoretically speaking, is there any way to figure out using statistics and using past histories if you can tell any kind of bump in performance? And that's what he was trying to do. He didn't do it very well, but I think that, like, certainly he would not be the first person to have written something, mainstream media or blog-wise, that said, hey, you really can, there might not be any specific evidence, but can you really trust anyone anymore? And I think it came across, because I said it was a little sloppily written, as an accusation of Raul Ibanez. And what he was really trying to do was to do the larger point, which I think, you know, I mean, many, many respected baseball writers that have all been very frustrated at what's all happened with the steroid idea, that notion that, wow, can we really trust anyone anymore? When's the next shoe to fall, and so on? And I think that's what he's trying to get at. And unfortunately, as these things tend to happen, it turned into a bloggers versus mainstream media thing, which you know, I think it polarizes an issue that I don't think necessarily it needs to be polarized. I think the lines are a lot more blurred on that in every direction anymore. You know, some of my favorite quote mainstream reporters in the world have really great blogs, and so I think that the distinction is a lot more fuzzy, and unfortunately, this was one of those things I think got a little bit more out of hand and turned into some sort of weird TV easy you're on this side and you're on this side thing that maybe I think was an oversimplification of the issue.
Well, exactly, and just because, again, you know, you're somebody that's done a lot in new media and really helped to build the sports blogosphere, I can understand your perspective on that. I agree with it, that it's the sports blogosphere shouldn't be held responsible for a lot of this stuff. Interestingly enough, a gentleman that you interviewed a couple of months ago in another realm, not in the role of Ken Tremendous, but in the role of you know, the writer producer for Parks and Recreation, certainly on FireJoeMorgan.com, they can find a lot of great examples of how sports writers in the old media have gone awry on this stuff. You really can't paint with a broad brush, Will, as far as people that commit excesses on either side.
Yeah, you know, I think so. And I think that I've always, to me, that was always kind of the shame of the Costas Now thing. Is it put people on opposite sides of an issue where there really didn't need to be opposite sides. You know, it's funny. I've talked to Buzz a lot since it's been more than a year now, and I've talked to Buzz a lot since then. I think I've always respected his work. I think he's begrudgingly come around to realize that I'm not a horrible human being. So we've come around that idea. But one of the things that we always talked about in the wake of that was on the night of that show. He and I actually had four different publications that we both wrote for at that time, and so this notion that there are these type of writers and these type of writers, certainly Buzz and I have a different style of writing, as Ken Rosenthal has a different style of writing than the guy that wrote the Ibanez piece. But certainly, this idea that there are journalists. And there are bloggers. That wasn't true a year ago, and it's certainly not true now.
No, I agree completely. I certainly agree. As far as the aforementioned interview that you did regarding Parks and Recreation, I have to say, you know, from my personal perspective, The Office is my favorite show on television. I went into that show expecting to like it. I basically have. I'd be interested to know your perspective because you're a Midwestern guy. I'm a Midwestern guy. I look at that, and it entertains me. It's not my favorite show on TV, but it entertains me. But I worry that it may not make it because it may not be fast moving enough for other people. Maybe other people aren't going to get it and it's going to get canceled. What are your thoughts on Parks and Recreation having covered the launch of it?
You know, I think it's going to get there. I think it's not quite there yet, which I think, frankly, I think that the people that do the show would agree with. You know, one of the things that Michael Schur, the guy that did Fire Joe Morgan and plays the great Moe Schrute on The Office, one of the things that he talked about in the interview was that he was one of the original writers on the American version of The Office, and he remembers very vividly those first six episodes, that much similar to what Parks and Recreation did, but it was a mini season to start out. And he remembers everyone's like, oh, this show's terrible. Why are we watching this? This is a terrible ripoff of the British show. Why are we doing this? And he's like, you know what? In retrospect, those shows weren't very good. We didn't have it nailed down yet. You have to let kind of shows give their time to breathe. I think the show's good. I enjoy the show. I think some very, very funny people on it. I think it hasn't hit its stride yet, but I think expecting a show to hit its stride in six episodes is a lot. You know, I think because NBC needs a hit and because it's from the guys that did The Office, there's this huge rump of expectation for it in a way that shows, I think, generally have a little bit more. You need to grow into shows a little bit, and shows that need to grow into their own skin. I think it's going to get there. Certainly, the raw pieces are there, and frankly, anything that has Amy Poehler on television for a half an hour, it's never going to be all bad.
Yeah, well, you know, from your lips to God's ears, I hope it gets enough of a chance. I hope it gets enough of a following. I really like it, and I just like the overall style of the product. Want to ask you, too, about the most recent, or one of the most recent things that you've written. I hesitate to say most recent, because I know you're writing for different outlets here, but this piece on the Cardinals and Albert Pujols for Deadspin really, really just grabbed my eye here. It's something that, you don't hear anybody even really speculating about this, but again, you being a Cardinal fan, you're following it closer than a lot of people do. You're privy to a lot of things following it closely as a fan and an observer. Talk about that here and what I think is an exceptional set of circumstances in the minds of most people. The thoughts that the team could possibly lose this guy and, as you've indicated, God forbid, collapse to the level of a Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, I think because St. Louis is one of the Cardinals are one of baseball's jewel franchises, and one of the classic franchises, and so on. Frankly, in the same way that the Reds and Royals and Orioles used to be, people don't think of them as a small market team, and they're not quite at the level of a Royals or so on. They have a stronger fan base, they have more income, but they don't. They can never pay what the Red Sox are going to pay, what the Yankees are going to pay, even though they have advantages that maybe some of the lower teams don't. The thing with Pujols is he's not going to be like go for the highest bidder but Pujols is very similar to Tony La Russa, who, as I tied to in the piece, his contract is up after this season. La Russa would love to stay with the Cardinals forever, but he wants to make sure that the front office is committed to winning. And his old general manager, Walt Jockney, is with the Reds now, so he doesn't quite have the same ties. He's not sure he trusts these guys yet. And Pujols and La Russa are so combined. They're such similar personalities, even in a lot of ways. I think Pujols eats meat. But other than that, I think that's a major difference. But they, you know, they're so similar and they're so kind of tied up that if La Russa were to leave, it would be a sign that he doesn't quite trust the way that this current management of the Cardinals are taking, or whether they're completely committed to winning. And if La Russa makes that decision, Pujols is going to be of the same mindset. So I think that yes, the Cardinals will never be able to match the money that the Red Sox or the Yankees or even the Cubs will be able to do. But I think he would stay as long as he was convinced the team would make the right moves to keep him there. So far, there's clear dissatisfaction from both La Russa and Pujols of whether they're willing to put those kind of moves and put that make those kind of moves and put the money behind it. It's a situation, it's not until after 2011 that he's a free agent, but a guy like Pujols, if he really went on the open market, there's just no way the Cardinals could possibly afford him. They're going to have to do a hometown discount to do something like that, which means you have to keep him happy, which means you have to win. So if you want, Albert, if you are a Red Sox fan or a Yankees fan or even a Giants fan or an Angels fan and you want Albert Pujols on your team, root against the Cardinals right now, because every moment of this year is a lot more important than I think a lot of people realize.
The thought of him going to Boston or New York or somewhere just horrifies me, like I think it would most people, you know. And I have to ask you to bring everything here full circle, Will. I want to ask you a dilemma question, and this one might stump you here, but let's go back to about the time of when you were in the We Live in Public House. This was pre-Deadspin. Cardinals hadn't won the World Series yet. What made me think of this question was I'm looking at this column thinking, man, you are going to look like such a genius in a year or two if he does leave and the circumstances are set. You know, that's pretty much just gravy, though. You know, yeah, this is post-Deadspin. You've already made your name, et cetera. But back at a point in time prior to that, when the Cardinals had not yet won the World Series, you know, and interrupted that drought since 82 and before Deadspin, would you have been at all conflicted if something like that came to pass, knowing that you wrote a column and it turned out, you know, that you looked like a genius and maybe it was like a great break for you personally, but your favorite team would lose a core person? Would you have been at all conflicted at that time, or would you have just looked at it like, screw it, I'm a fan first, and, you know, I don't want to make a name in this kind of a way? What would you have thought at that point in time, you know, to have a column like that and a prediction or potential prediction that would come true but be so ruinous to your own team?
Well, certainly I hope my prediction on this is wrong in this case, and certainly back then before a World Series would have happened, it would have been a lot harder. But, you know, I mean, the fight between who I'm most loyal to, my the readers or my dad. Ooh, I don't know. That's a tough one. I certainly got an angry phone call from my dad after that column ran, even yesterday. The idea of, like, you're not saying Pujols is leaving, are you? And I was like, no, dude, I'm just saying. I'm just putting out the circumstances. But all told, deep down, I've been writing for, I've been a professional writer for, you know, about 13, 14 years now. I've been a Cardinal fan for 33, so that may answer the question right there.
You know what? That's the weakness all of us have here. You know, we all have our professional pride and our records and everything like that. But, you know, we grow to be fans as little kids here. And, yeah, that's going to take precedent in a lot of cases. Well, I've got the other book here, which I've showed for the camera previously here, God Save the Fans. So we've got that. Of course, mentioned your work, New York Magazine, the Sporting News, still with Deadspin. Am I missing anything, Will? Is there anything else that we should be pushing out there?
I'm deep into work on the next book right now, which will be out next Father's Day. So probably as soon as I get off the phone, I will go back to my computer and stare at the wall and type real fast for 5 hours and hope it'll be done in time for next year.
Excellent. Well, you know what? Hey, we're grateful for you taking time out of your day to come on with us here, Will. Just enjoyed it. It was a real pleasure. I would love to talk to you again sometime. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. Anytime.
Appreciate it.